Desi, noun, a person of Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Nepali, or Sri Lankan origin who lives abroad.
American Desi. Well, that's what we hope to discover here.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of American Desis. I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash.
We have with us again Varun Leila.
We got the name this time.
We did. We put the name in there
right away.
Right away, so we wouldn't forget. If you haven't listened to part one, stop your recording, scroll up or down, hit that first part and listen. It's fascinating conversations. We didn't even get to start talking about his profession and his, you know, his life at currently. So that's pretty much what we're going to dive right into.
Yeah.
Tell us the question that we were starting right before we ended the last episode was, you know, you were saying that there's a, you know, South Asian agents are on the rise, that there's, you know, a growing number of us. But was that true when you started? How long have you been an agent?
Yeah, I've been an agent for, you know, 2 years now. I've been in, you know, Hollywood for about 5 years now. I called it Hollywood. How lame is that?
No, I mean, it's true, though.
Entertainment industry.
Yeah.
We're not that important. We can't, like, say DC and, like...
It's, right. You know. Fair.
But, you know, I've been in the entertainment industry for about 5 years now. You know, there's been, I think now it's probably, I mean, now is definitely the time that where there are the most amount of South Asian, you know, writers, directors, and especially executives than ever before. You know, I think that's probably because, you know, whether you're second generation American or first generation American, you know, it probably took until the late 90s or the early 2000s for parents to let their kids take that sort of risk.
Right? True.
You know, and so I think it's coming up where you see a lot of, whether it's East Asians or South Asians, you see a lot of executives who would not have been in the industry in the 90s or in the 80s especially.
Really quickly, personally, what made you decide to be an agent?
In between college and entering the entertainment industry, I was a business consultant. I made a lot more money than I do now. And for me, it was, you know, when I grew up in East Texas, listen to part one of the podcast for the origin story.
Yeah.
You know, entertainment was my escape to a bigger world.
Right.
Right. So I fell in love with movies. I fell in love with television. And I just love the art form. And for me, life's too short to not do what you love, right?
I agree. So you decided agent over being like an actor. You said you want to be a director, Scorsese.
Yeah, that was the dream. I just realized that I don't have, for better or for worse, I don't have a big enough ego to be a director.
Okay.
And like you need a big one. You got to bend everyone's will to your direction if you're a good director. And that requires a big ego. And for me, combining the business aspect with the ability to, you know, I don't have to write a great screenplay. I can represent 50 writers who all write great screenplays.
Right.
So just getting to be involved with so much, you know, creation of great scripts, that was enough for me to you know, satisfy that bug.
So you started becoming an agent. You're satisfying that bug. You find that it's satisfying that for you. When you were entering, did you feel a specific, I don't want to use the word mission, but an intention that you were going to focus on South Asian artists, that you were going to focus on that story, or did you want to just be an agent?
You know, ultimately, being an agent, especially like a lit agent when you're working with writers, it's about finding people that can tell stories that haven't been told before. So I think for better or for worse, as far as it goes for my personal cultural identity, I think you have to look at South Asian writers as being part of storytellers who are telling stories that haven't been told before.
Yeah, but I mean, Chilean writers' stories aren't being told the same way. Argentinian stories aren't being told. Like, I mean, fucking stories from Uganda aren't being told in the same way. But you picked South Asian.
I picked it's my cultural background. I have the experience with it. But for me, you know,
plus, who cares about Chile?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, honestly.
But that being said, you know, we as a cultural group, right? As the total, what do you call it? The diaspora.
Yeah. Right.
That's an SAT word right there. Right? You know, in every aspect of society, whether it's, you know, medicine, you know, we had the CEO of Pepsi, you know, the governor of Louisiana, however you feel about him.
I mean,
Piyush, I'm talking to you. I know your name, man. Don't deny it, Bobby. That being said, we've succeeded. We've represented, you know, across the board, except when it came to Hollywood, to media, whether it's, you know, singers or writers or actors. You know, there's been almost an underrepresentation compared to how well, you know, we've succeeded across those other industries. And I think it's that experience that, you know, tells something new. And I think Hollywood is starting to recognize that as well.
Let's go back 5 years when you started, when you got into this, when you got into the corporate landscape of, you know, Hollywood, as we're calling it. Was it weird? Was there stuff that you had to culturally navigate? Did people, was there any friction that you got based on the account of your, you know, being different and being South Asian?
I mean, I'd like to say no, and I've never felt anything, right? Especially, you know, growing up with, you know, real prejudice, you know, it's easier to recognize that. That being said, this industry is a networking industry, right? The entirety of success, whether you're an executive on the business side of things or you're a writer on the artist side of things, is completely based off of who you know and who's willing to help you.
Right.
And studies show that scientifically, we are always more willing to help people who look like us.
Tribalism.
Right?
But isn't that funny that we, and I think this was in part one, the story on how, yeah, that was part one, so I'm going to reference something. If you haven't listened, go back. But isn't that funny, when we've talked about within our community, we've recognized that isn't always true.
It isn't always true. But
do you find that it is true for us in this world, or do you still think there are remnants of that college girl that's like, I don't really want to futz with that?
Look, I think you're always going to see both sides of it. I think ultimately the Indian community is very, look, you're always somebody's cousin, right? You know, you might have a third, fourth, fifth family connection. And, you know, at least it's true of my parents' generation, but I'd like to still think it holds true, that you do favors. Your grandma calls you up and says you have a cousin that's in town, go host them for a day. You go, you know, right. you do that favor. So I think ultimately we're supporting community, but ultimately this industry, you know, whether it's the frat boy tribe or the Jewish tribe, that's been, you know, sort of the mainstay of the industry since the 1950s, you know, it's hard to break in based on networking alone. You know, I'm coming as the son of somebody who would never even think that the entertainment industry was a possibility.
Right.
And I have to come in here with absolutely no connections, and I'm competing with kids who are fourth generation,
right,
you know, Hollywood. And when it's all networking, you know, being an outsider, regardless of what type of outsider you are, it's really tough. If you are not a Jewish white male, it used to be super tough. Now it's changed.
There's, so how are you navigating that? How are you navigating that?
Just, you know, I use humor. I use humor for everything. So I'm the one who is the funny guy, and then, two, people will always take you up on a free drink. If you offer free alcohol to people, they just say, when do I show up? So, you know, you just have to put people at ease, and you have to make people feel like they're interacting with a true individual, and they want to get to know you if you present yourself that way. And I think, you know, I've never made the call to another Indian executive specifically to say, hey, we both come from a similar cultural background. You know, we should talk. I'd like to learn from you. Even though I know in my head that I totally should.
Would you but why haven't we? If someone else did that to you?
I wouldn't. I actually, I'd encourage it if someone did that to me. I'd feel important if someone did that to me. But at the same time, you know, this is part of that assimilation thing. You know, you don't want to talk about it in public, right? You don't want to make that a point of contention in public, because you also have to, you know, the way I relate it is, when I was in high school and elementary school, if there was a single textbook chapter about India, everybody would turn to me. Now, yeah. I'm not the arbiter on, you know, 15th century Indian history.
Quick aside, the one chapter in India we did in sixth grade, we took a test on India. I got one question wrong. That question haunts me to this day.
What was it?
It was, what is the primary religion in India? And I thought it was Hinduism, but I thought my book said Buddhism. And I was like, well, I'll just go with the book. These guys are fucking idiots, but whatever. And turns out they're booking you. You know what I mean? I just assumed it was wrong, and I got a 95, and that eats me away.
Wait, so you're saying the primary religion is Buddhism?
No, I said Buddhism because I thought this was what the book said. In my mind, I was like, it's Hinduism, but I mean, the book is wrong, and I'm just going to go with the book to assimilate and get the question right.
Listeners, aren't you...
You don't want to be wrong, right? If the book was like, oh, yeah, sure.
Where were you at, though? Because now I got completely lost into that story, and I want to go back to 6th grade.
Oh, yeah, but with that being said, you never... I think there is pressure to, like, not call out, you know, to another Indian person, hey, you're Indian, help me because of that.
Why not, though? But you were just talking about how this is like a tribal, so, you know, the Jewish frat. You're talking about the frat boy mentality. This, why are we not creating that South Asian tribe? Why are we not actively saying, yo, we need to get together? You talked about that this is the time. We have executives in power now. We have agents. We have directors. We have writers. We have actors. Why are we not saying, yo, let's come together and let's be that tribe?
You know, I think it's critical mass. I think we're going to hit it soon. I think once there are enough people, you don't want to start a party and only have five people show up.
Why not?
So,
but this isn't a party. This is not. That's not the same thing.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
A secret society that's going to take over the world.
But I do mean, like, you know, you want to, like, you know, there is a gay in Hollywood society. There is a black in Hollywood society.
Yeah.
There are about 50 Latino in Hollywood societies. The question is, are there enough South Asians to do, you know, a South Asian in Hollywood society?
I would like
to think so.
Are there enough, but is there enough interest? Is there enough self-interest?
Because
the way that you're talking about, the way that we identify, what I'm hearing is there's a resistance to fully own that identity. There's still a desire, this is what I'm hearing from this conversation, a desire to blend and pass almost. So is that... I don't know. Is that maybe what's stopping us from really saying we need to create that ourselves?
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe, you know, because of, you know, Akashi, you mentioned offline about
I'm listening.
and you were very correct about it.
Damn,
I just
wanted
to say it part two. He's also correct. That
the mascots.
There isn't a true oppression factor for South Asians as a group, right? And I think part of that recognition also leads to the fact that there isn't a sort of a true networking factor involved. I think, you know, because we don't feel that same isolation that maybe other groups do, we also don't want to call it out. I would love there to be a society, but I also, at the same time, have a conflicted feeling about being the one
to start,
to spearhead it, and to start it.
Is that a personal thing, or is that to do with the idea of it?
I think when you're trying to succeed just as an executive, you know, you sometimes paint a target on your back by saying I'm this type of executive,
right?
And I think that, you know, affirmative action. You know, every you know, I feel this way, but I'm sure some other other South Asian executives feel this way. Every single corporation has diversity initiatives, right? And I think we all agree that diversity is important from a perspective point. But if you're the diverse one, you don't want to be someone's mascot. You don't want to be the diversity mascot.
Is that the thing is, you don't want to still have to be the educator for the world. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and you don't want your only value to be
right.
Your just your cultural identity, right? You want to be about the stories that you bring to the table because you have a different background.
I actually wanted to ask you, we've had a lot of Indian actors on the show. Arjun is an actor. South Asian, sorry. The four of you who are offended. But what I want to know is, what is our perception? We know what it's like to get work and try to audition, but you get to see on the other side of the camera, how are South Asian actors and actresses perceived? Like, is there a, hey, we need to get a South Asian, are we considered as hardworking as we are with everything else? Yeah. I don't want to keep talking.
I think educated is like usually the word. I mean, it's very, especially for actors, and this goes for any actor across the board, whether you're gay or you're blonde, you know, it's about the stereotypes to a certain degree. You know, it's, you know, we're seen as very educated, very smart, on the con side of things, you know, and I think, you know, as personally as actors, I think people really do find it culturally interesting. I think there's a sort of, exoticism to being a South Asian person and an actor, and people think that you bring some deepness, some spiritual connections to right. to a lot of stuff.
Like the wise person, yeah, too. Right.
You got you. But on the flip side, I think that it is very clearly seen, especially for males, that you will not be the sexual lead of. Yeah. Any show, right? And
except for The Magicians Coming to Sci-Fi, yeah. 2016. What up, people?
Watch out!
Now that was gonna be my follow-up, because that's a thing we've talked about a lot. Have you seen Indians go really far in audition? It seems like they crushed it. Everybody really likes them, but it's like, we just don't think people are going to buy a South Asian sex symbol or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it on both sides, both for actors and actresses. That they reach, you know, they nail the acting part of it, but when it comes to the look, you know, they often get told they don't have it, or they're not right for the part. Now
that's code.
It's code, right? People, and, you know, this also especially affects East Asians, because, you know, South Asians, we've had a couple of success stories, you know. You know,
Priyanka Chopra.
Yeah,
Priyanka Chopra. I mean, Chopra. Honestly, dog.
Hottest woman, 2011.
She ain't all that.
All time. She had a little bit of crossover success. She was in some movies. We have some, you know, Annette Mahanju is like, you know, she's hot.
Right. Frida Pinto, all my friends love her that aren't in it.
They've had some success stories. But, you know, East Asian males, never going to happen. Never going to happen.
Whoa, never going to happen.
Never, future tense.
I mean,
that's
we're talking. This is like a 20, 30 year cultural unwinding that has to happen. I mean, Jet Li in his own movies could not be the romantic lead of most of his movies, right? The closest thing he got was Romeo Must Die. With Aaliyah, and he just didn't even kiss her in like the entire movie.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, if you think Romeo Must Die, that's almost 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
And we had a guest on here, Timothy De La Ghetto, YouTube superstar.
Yeah.
Which we kind of touched on how much everything is changing earlier. He talked about how girls will hit him up, and I've seen the tweets. I never thought Asian guys were cute until I saw Timothy De La Ghetto.
Yeah.
So do you think with everything changing as rapidly as it is, it's safe to say this is what it's going to be?
I hope for it. But it takes a lot to change old Hollywood and old casting notes. I mean, these notes go, it's deep. It's ingrained in people's heads. And, you know, it's different for Timothy because, and maybe this will be the change. It has to come from the YouTube generation because it's different for Timothy because Timothy puts his own stuff out there and he does great and he has that direct connection so he can get that feedback. But when you have a 60-year-old woman, you know, who sits in the CBS lot, who has lived a very particular life, maybe her parents were in the industry, maybe her grandparents were in the industry as well, you know, these sort of cultural cues sort of just get passed down from one casting director to another. This is just how you're trained. There's going to be no South Asian or East Asian male romantic leads. And that's just the shorthand you use just so you can get through 1,000 actors. And, you know, hopefully it'll eventually change. King Tut on Spike has a very attractive Indian male as the lead whose name escapes me, but good for him.
Right.
You know?
Arjun is getting jealous in his
seat. No, I mean, we have Sendo. We've had Sendo. We've had Utkarsh's. I mean, we've had... oh, got it. Adir is even being the... like
yeah.
Adir. Manish, of course. Yeah, he's a good looking... I mean, on the flip side, well, women, you know, we have Melanie. We have Amisheth. We have a ton of people. I mean, I was also... You know, I got to have sex with women on TV in shows. So I think it is changing for us. Yeah. Why do you think it's changing for us quicker than you would say for the East Asian population?
You know, there, you know, I'd say that there's just been this emasculation for East Asian males that goes back to the 70s, and it takes a lot to change that. I mean, and this is something that is, you know, pretty culturally ingrained. OkCupid did a survey recently.
Yeah, East Asian males least popular.
Least popular.
Whoa.
East Asian males. Less popular among East Asian women, right? Only black girls gave East Asian males love. And it was...
Black girls are mad accepting.
Mad accepting.
Also, that's ironic because those were the two least popular groups together.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about... let's talk about like an undervalued...
Maybe they were just throwing
like,
a ball. Like, I know where you're coming from right now, dog.
Diminished group, right? The black woman online dating, that is...
Well, maybe it also has for us because, you know, we have the Kama Sutra, we're exoticized from that standpoint.
Yeah.
So there might be a sexualization.
There's a loathing. Now we're getting onto a different topic, but I've noticed from a lot of Asian women that they will say, like, my mom told me never date an Asian man.
Whoa.
Yeah. I think we just beaten them down so much with self-confidence that it's like... Dang. They are the most self-loathing of any minority. We're not that far behind.
I've been told by both Indian girls and white girls that Indian men are controlling, sexually aggressive, you know, creepy, you know, any race has to deal with their own stereotypes, but they're, you know, when it comes to...
Is that a thing we have as Indian men?
That's a thing we're told.
Right, but is that the stereotype we walk around with? Is
sure.
That...
Well, especially, absolutely. I mean, the last 5 years, like, you know, The Guardian... or the Daily Sun or whatever those British, you know, tabloid newspapers, they love reporting about, you know, rapes happening in India.
Yeah, you know, if you actually look it up, America has the most reports of rape. Maybe it's just the ones that are reported, but
yeah,
statistically it's still America, but the perception is it's India, it's happening.
Just
can't be
daily basis. You can't
even be a woman in India without getting raped.
I mean, I had a female friend who asked if it was okay if she, like, went to India. And I'm like, I mean, you can go to India. You shouldn't do anything you wouldn't do going to any other, you know, second world country and walk around in areas that you shouldn't be walking around. But tons of tourists go from around the world every year and they come back and nothing bad happens to them. They wrote an entire book called Eat, Pray, Love about it. at least one third of a book. But,
I mean, there is... I mean, let's not be too casual.
Yeah.
There are dangers.
There are dangers. It's a real issue. I mean, it's a real issue here as well.
Yes, I agree.
And it's, but that being said, you know, it's crime. It's like any crime statistic. You are ultimately projecting the actions of a small group of people. Now, whether that's, you know, 10% versus 8% out of, you know, 100, you're ultimately projecting the actions of a small group of people onto the will and identity of literally a billion people on the planet. right? I think, you know,
well, it's also interesting that you're saying that it's not only translating to them there, it's also translating to the South Asian men
here. Yeah.
That's what's even more interesting.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that, you know, if anything, you know, I'm biased, but, you know, Indian men that I've met here have been, you know, more emotionally sensitive and, you know, more in touch with expression and creativity than, you know, the average stereotypical white male.
That's interesting.
But, yeah, and that comes from, you know, that's part of outsider perspective, you know. Just growing up in a minority in a country.
For sure.
But I wouldn't say that it's a stereotype or a big facet, you know, to be sexually aggressive or dominant of any, you know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we had a woman on here, you know, back when this was called Indian American, which, you know, we may have released by this time or not. But Pallavi, who talked about, where we talked about this, that this was something that she had experienced, that there was not the sexually aggressive, but the controlling aspect was something that they...
It was more of an insecurity. She said Indian men had a problem with her job.
But it wasn't just that. There was also a... Oh, was it just... I mean, I have to re-listen.
That's my recollection.
But there doesn't... I mean, it seems like there are...
Which
would
be an insecurity, which could cause being controlling also.
But the truth of the matter is, trying to paint an entire group of men in one... with three colors of a paintbrush, it's going to be foolhardy because we're human. There are going to be some people that are like that, and there are going to be a lot of people that aren't. I mean, that's the reality of life.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this then. We've talked about women who do not want to associate with Indian men. Is it important for you to marry a South Asian woman?
Get it.
I like that. I'm killing with the segues right now, though.
Yo.
It is not a do or die
right
decision for me, right? My parents are very liberal by, you know, first generation immigrant standards. They're fine with me marrying a girl of any race as long as she's educated. I think education is, they just don't want me marrying a dumb girl.
Right.
You know, personally for me,
the bar from two PhDs, God help the woman that walks into your house, because good Lord.
Right. She's got to be smart to step up. My mom will get her in the first 5 seconds. Like,
wait, can we ask? We didn't even ask. How did your parents, two PhDs, immigrants, they are doing research in hematology, blood.
Yeah.
And how did they feel about you leaving business to enter into the arts, even though it was on an executive business side of things?
My parents are both extremely supportive of me. You know, as long as I am financially able to live and that I'm a happy person, that's what matters for them. The thing they like to remind me of, though, is my potential, my money-making potential. So, you know, walking away from a potential job at Google, walking away from, you know, the tech jobs.
I am judging you just as much as them right now. Holy you fuck, know, you didn't say Google.
They like to remind me of that on
a weekly basis.
Do I regret not having the money? Yes. Do I regret choosing to do this industry? No. I'm young. I'm still young. I don't want to be, you know. I believe in reincarnation, but I don't believe in that you have as unlimited amount of time to do whatever you want.
Right.
You know. I think that
this lifetime is still finite.
Yeah. This life you have in front of you is still finite. And I think it's too short, you know. Maybe this is being, you know, spoiled, you know, middle income family talk. But, you know, we have the ability to do what we want and make a living of it. You know, you just got to do what makes you happy. Because ultimately, if you're forcing yourself to go be a doctor or a lawyer or something else because your parents want you to be that, you know, you're gonna be 45, 50 years old and really bitter for absolutely no reason outside of your own choices.
Right.
And so, you know, this is the choice I made just to stay sane. If I succeed at it, wonderful. If I fail at it, great. I have the background to go do something more reasonable.
Right.
But for now, you know, they've been supportive of it, and That's all I can accept.
Did we get the actual answer for your personal preference? Yeah. Who you would like to marry?
No.
I blossomed. I was a young man who blossomed.
Right.
And there were not any Indian girls.
I told you euphemism for white girls. I be calling it, don't I? Damn, I'm nice with mines.
They just weren't around. Now that being said, I accept any
compliment. Oh man, this is I wish we had video for this.
Yo,
when are you running for office, politician? Yeah. When are you running for office, politician? My goodness.
Ultimately, it's I do, look, my name's Varun, my brother's name's Neil. He got the super safe name.
Right.
And he got it because my parents told them. They said, you just named your son something ridiculous. The next one that comes out,
That's not ridiculous.
Just give him a
normal. Let's talk about, you say Varun.
Yeah. Why do I butcher my own name?
Do you do that consciously? Do you do that? Call. Do you do that?
Self-appropriation.
Yeah. No, for me, it was, look, Varun is like something that's like, you get Warren a lot. And I had this woman, this teacher in Texas, who she just called me for a straight year, just called me Warren.
Because my mom
tried to teach her how to correctly say my own name.
Varun.
How is it actually pronounced? Varun or Varun?
It's pronounced, most Indian people have pronounced it Varun to me.
Varun.
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 Varun. Okay, well,
because here's the thing. I have a personal thing about this where I think, like, are you doing it? You were talking about networking. You were talking about, needing to get ahead, like, in these cultural landscape that you have. Is a part of it you doing it so it'll be easier for these white folk and non-Indian Desi folk to integrate?
You know, I just didn't think, I don't think I knew better as a kid growing up, right? When you have all these people butchering your name constantly, when you're going throughout school, you don't know any better to correct them. You usually don't use your own first name.
But now you know.
And then what happened?
But now you know.
Yeah, it was just, I came attached to what I was called. And so now I end up with the Texanization of my own name. And I'm comfortable with that because to me, the British people are the worst at just completely butchering Indian names.
They ain't as bad as you.
They're not as bad as me.
So here's the question though. So how do you identify? You said you identified as a Texan.
Yep.
Would you say that you said that you've identified as Indian? How do you identify? Do you identify Indian, Indian American, Desi, South Asian? How would you label yourself?
Yeah, I think it's being Indian American with a heavy emphasis on the American part of that.
Right.
That phrase. Ultimately, identity is a mix of how you view yourself and how other people view you. Right?
Really?
I think so. I think people project onto other
people. Yeah, but your identity is you.
You can dictate to people who you are?
No.
No.
I think you can't control that.
Yeah.
But I don't think you have to self-identify with that they are projecting.
I think that's
a dangerous choice, and I think that's a choice that we need to start cautioning ourselves on, that we start internalizing external projections upon us. That's I strongly disagree with that.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily by choice, and I think you do have to be thoughtful about it. I think people tend to just be. They tend to internalize outward social focuses. No one knows they're ugly until they tell you that you're ugly.
But then you don't self-identify.
So then, the question is,
but are they ugly?
So that's the question, right? Is whether people internalize that projection or whether they let it go, right? Because beauty is a weird
subjective
construct.
Relative construct.
It's a subjective thing. That being said, I don't think anyone can truly, completely cut off outward, internalization of outward projection. I think that's just human nature, that on some level, you're going to take how other people treat you and internalize it.
Well, I want to hear what the community thinks about it. We're going to have to wrap this up in a couple minutes, so I want to jump back to...
Let's talk about the industry some more.
No, let's jump back to this. This, unless you have something
I have no... Just I want to ask... That's my only advice. Just keep writing people.
No, yeah. We'll give you a second. I want to hear that, your advice to people in a second, but I want to say this because it segues with this. You're talking about your identity, Indian-American. Yeah. You talked about the way that you... Your predilection for dating all races. Do you feel a responsibility towards the next generation from a standpoint of cultural preservation?
Yeah. So what I was, before we got sidelined on all the beautiful women, ladies, just so you know, all of you, beautiful. I would never say you're ugly. You don't have to internalize that. I do feel, you know, as much shit as my parents got for giving me, quote unquote, an esoteric name from their lab partners. And, you know, Neil's still a very strong Indian name, has Indian roots, but it's something that everyone's familiar with over here. You know, there is that part of me, I've already thought about it. I want my kid to have an Indian name.
Right.
Right? I'm not afraid of that.
Now, hold on a second. Are you gonna pronounce this an Indian name properly?
No. I'm gonna still butcher it.
Because then let me ask you a question, real talk. What's the point? If you're gonna fucking throw out a name and not pronounce it the way it's meant to be pronounced, what's the fucking point?
Talk about shots fired. Shots fired.
What's the point? I mean, I just really just don't understand that. I don't mean to be harsh. I don't mean to be. I just really don't fucking get it.
Get out of our house.
I don't get it. What's the point?
Then
disassociate.
No, I'm gonna try. That's the thing. I still care enough to try. My parents did, and this isn't their fault. They were always working. They did a terrible job at correcting me or teaching me, you know, what that part of my identity means, right? But I think that it's, look, I still want to try to be somebody who passes down a sense of community to my kids. You know, being in LA, I've actually gotten to do some things, right? I've actually gotten to be more involved with being Indian culturally. And I want to pass that down. Now, whether that's an aspect of me feeling guilty about my own self, you know, doing that, or if it's a true nature of, you know, connection to my self-identity, I don't know. I don't have that answer. But what I do know is that I don't want that kid to feel the same pressure that I did to just kind of sweep it on the rug until they turn 18.
Word.
And I don't want them to feel like they ever have to just be somebody who explains what their identity is about. I want them to feel like they can live it, and they can be comfortable with it, and they can move forward in it. Now, I'm gonna butcher the pronunciation because I'm bad. I just do that across the board. That's why I'm gonna go with something real simple. Just gonna call him Raj, and we're gonna be Vijay. It's not hard to like butcher. Well, even
that's
Vijay.
Vijay.
So, right, see? I still do it.
But you can learn, Vijay.
But you can learn. I mean, things are changeable.
This is why, like, you know, I hope the podcast doesn't have to change its name because you had such a bad Indian on the show.
No, that's not at all what we're saying. But it is something, you know, for me, it's a personal thing, I think. We got to wrap this up. You had a piece of advice you wanted to give to our listeners that might be trying to do this.
Look, if you're, if you act, if you write, just keep creating stuff. Right now, there are a billion people on YouTube who just have nothing to do while they're on the toilet. They need to be watching something. They should be watching you. So if you're ever stuck, you don't know how to break into the industry, just keep creating stuff and putting it out there. And if it's good, it'll hopefully find an audience. And if it's bad, I can't help you and I won't sign you. But... But hopefully it's good.
Great advice. We should take it ourselves.
Just keep creating. People, you know, the worst type of writer is the one who doesn't write. So
beautiful.
You got to keep writing. Got to keep creating.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. We'll have to revisit you in several months and see how you're pronouncing your children's names.
I'm going to work on it.
Guys, we're going to drop the discussion in a couple of days. You know what to do. We want to hear from you. A lot of stuff that we talked about that I think that, you know, we would love to hear your thoughts on. So get at us. We have a website. We have the forum. We have Twitter. We have Facebook. We've made it really fucking easy for y'all to reach out to us. So get at us, please.
Yeah. Reach out to us. Reach out to each other. Talk to each other on a forum. Start a thread. Also, keep doing the ratings for the podcast. Subscribing to the podcast. Telling people about it. We need your help to spread the word. Otherwise, we're just going to quit in a few months and suck our dick, everybody.
Wow. We're going to hopefully edit that out.
too real.
I'm Arjun.
And I'm Akash.
We'll catch you in a couple days.
God bless.